Yeah, I'm here, man.
The lights are growing dim. I know a life of
Deadpan Podcast
led me to this sorry fate. And yet, I blame
Jack Mangan. Jack Mangan.
He made me what I am.
That's bullshit. You're a white suburban punk, just like me.
But it still hurts.
You're gonna be all right, man. Maybe not.
And welcome to Deadpan number 87. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Hombre Secreto. And I am looking for the joke with a microscope. And I've had some cans of stuff that's just labeled beer and eaten some food. And this is actually the Repo Palooza episode. Or Repo Pan Palooza, whatever you want to call it. Where we're just going to talk and discuss and just riff on the film Repo Man from 1984, starring Emilio Estevez. Got tons of content and tons of response and feedback from people out there. It's been fantastic. We did this once before for the Sean Connery movie Zardoz, but the response for this has been even greater. We even have some fan fiction, so you'll want to listen. In fact, in this episode, we got so much good Repo Pan content that we're going to skip over what is customary for Deadpan. We're going to skip over the podcast promo. So I'll just tell you, listen to the Farpoint recap. Featuring Dub Shack. There you go. All right, you might even hear The Sims in the background because Leanne is playing. Or you might not because my microphone's a piece of shit. But anyway, enough talk from me. Let's get straight into the Repo Man content for the Repo Pan Palooza.
My apologies for the audio quality, Deadpan. I'm not set up to record in front of the TV, so this is the sound from my laptop in my lap. Let's get ready to watch Repo Man. Let's take ourselves in the Wayback Machine to a time in which the Cold War was quite hot. If you were a teenager, you thought very likely that the Soviet Union would destroy us at any moment. Nuclear war was imminent, it was just a matter of when. So the future was quite uncertain. The pop music industry was starting to have cracks form in it, as the punk rock music scene, which had existed for some time, was starting to show up in suburbia, and kids, teens, young 20s, were starting to see behind the curtain, find out that there was some other kind of music than what they had been spoon-fed on their top 40 radio. So, here we go, into the Wayback Machine, even watching this on VHS. And
hello, Deadpan. My name is Retro, and this is my review of Repo Man. Overall, I like Repo Man as an experimental film. How would I describe it? A less violent Pulp Fiction with more wackiness and less direction? A slightly less misogynistic version of A Boy and His Dog? Bill and Ted Dunn as a film school project? There's a lot of satire going on here. The Repo Men, government agents, girlfriends, cops, cons, etc. exist only for the purpose of being made fun of. So if you don't find the satire particularly amusing, I don't think you'll like Repo Man, as its story, and I use that term loosely, is totally secondary to the satire. I give it 3 out of 5 stars.
I think I prefer Canadian bacon myself. Hey! Those are my shoes! You're a Chevy Malibu! They don't even fit!
Hello, Mr. Parker Overdrive, about the Repo Deadpan. One of my fondest memories of Repo Man was the very beginning when he runs over some trash left in the street. I felt like that kind of summarized Repo Man. It was just such a ridiculous, ludicrous thing for someone to leave their own trash just out in the middle of the street, and the ludicrous argument over it, and it just seemed so human and so absurd at the same time, yet so real. The whole entire film just kind of bordered between the absurd and just the reality of what it takes to make a living in this world being an absolute jackass and taking other people's cars from them just because they're behind for a few payments. Anyway, that was just one of the scenes of that movie that really stuck in my head. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Jack. This is Ed from Texas with some comments on Repo Man, this Deadpanapalooza movie that we've picked. I guess it's pretty clear from the message board that I'm probably in the minority of those that didn't really care much for the movie. This was my first time seeing it. I'd never really seen it or really knew much about it before. And I guess I'm having trouble figuring out what the attraction is. You know, I've certainly seen my share of kind of absurd sort of movies that kind of seem to poke fun at the world around them and whatnot and not take themselves too seriously. And I certainly sensed a lot of that on the one hand with this, with things, of course, like the generically labeled food and the rather ridiculous ice storm special effect, to name a couple of examples. But then on the other hand, it seemed to be trying to take itself too seriously in other aspects of it. And I found I just really couldn't connect with any of the characters, or really, I don't know, just really didn't care much about what happened to any of them. For me, that's a pretty critical part of getting into a story, are the characters. You know, whether it's a movie or a book or whatever, I find that I really have to be able to invest or care about the characters to some degree, you know, and I can forgive a lot of, I don't know, story details and writing quirks if the characters are interesting, but I just really didn't identify or find anything really likable about any of these people in this movie. So I guess that was probably the biggest kind of turnoff for me. But overall, I did enjoy the experience. I think it's cool that we, you know, been doing kind of group movie reviews like this. Zardoz, I think, was certainly a better case. And I hope we'll continue this in the future and pick another movie and let Deadpanapalooza continue. But that's really all I have for now. Well, let's hear what other people have to say. Take care.
Nice. Nicely done setup here in the very beginning. You quickly see a society that's become very homogenized with all of its generic product and yet completely inundated with advertising, singing the 7-Up theme and dedicated to our favorite show, great song, Monday Night Football, Saturday Night Live, Gilligan's Island. As he's walking through a dump, see society becoming very split between the reality, which is grim and stacking cans in a supermarket, and the perceived world, which is what's shown to us on TV. Nice. Nicely done. Ah, let's see what happens now.
Hey, kid. Hey. Hey, kid. Hey, you hard of hearing? What do you want? You want to make $10? Fuck you, queer. Now, wait a minute.
All right, well, we're doing the Repo Pan Palooza thing for Repo Man. And I have here with me a guy who you may or may not realize is actually quite the film buff and quite the film expert. And thank you very much for coming and doing this for me. Charlie the Beer Guy, I guess we can call him for this episode, Charlie the Repo Guy.
I was going to say Charlie the Film Guy, but that right. Sounds a little, yeah.
Charlie
yucky.
Charlie the Filmy Teeth. No.
Stop now.
Charlie the Plate of Shrimp Guy, actually, since we're doing Repo Man. So I guess I'll just, you know, we'll just completely keep this free form. Throw some thoughts out there.
Well, I guess I encountered Repo Man back in the mid-80s. I think it was a 1984 film. And it was probably 84, 85. I ran across it on Cinemax and had my VHS, you know, recording device ready at the time that my parents were so, you know, thoughtful to buy, and recorded it. And I mean, it was just a movie that just blew me away for some reason. And I really don't even know if I could tell you now why. But I watched that thing over and over again. And, you know, at first I felt like I was identifying with Emilio Estevez. And then it was the writing. I don't know. I basically fell madly in love with Repo Man at a young age, and I haven't shaken it since.
And that is interesting that you encountered it, because, you know, I encountered it, I don't remember the year, but it was a long, long time ago. But watching it now, and watching it with new people now, trying to kind of see it through their eyes, it is dated. It absolutely is dated. It's not, you know, it's an 80s movie, and it shows it.
But that's sort of the beauty of it, because it captures that time so well.
Right.
Southern Los Angeles in the punk era. It's there. It's all there. And so, you know, I mean, it's what it was then. It's what it is now. It's if you're into that stuff, the movie just encapsulates it and makes it hilarious and makes it just absolutely head spinningly crazy, you know?
Yeah. And actually, that's a good point. It is so, as I'm watching it every time, it's just so L.A. It's just such an L.A. You know, there's like that intangible L.A. Like, for example, like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, you know, you don't even need to hear them say that they're from L.A. and you know it. Like, or Motley Crue. This movie, you know, of course, it just has that same L.A. feel, you know, just, it's so L.A., especially an 80s L.A.
Well, and captured for me in the movie by the scene where Otto, after striking out with his whatever girl, is sitting there with the sun rising up over behind him, and he starts singing the song TV Party.
Mm-hmm.
And Saturday Night Live, the Flintstones, and
right.
And to me it was like, wow. I mean, I was a suburban punk from Des Moines, Iowa at the time. And I'm like, that's what it would be like to be a suburban punk in LA. I mean, that,
right.
You know, you're half drunk, the sun's coming up, you're pissed off, you don't know why, and you start throwing shit around. That's what it's all about, you know?
A white suburban punk, but it still hurts.
Yeah, but it still hurts, exactly.
And actually, all right, since you brought up that scene actually kind of fascinates me for a couple of reasons, because, you know, you're right, he's all upset, he's kind of sitting there moping, he sings a song, but then he's done. He gets up, he walks away, and he's done. It's washed off.
I mean, that was liberating for me. I mean, in general, and it's like, I don't know if it's the power of music or the punk attitude or whatever. It's like you just, and he does it in the movie. Throw up the two fingers. Fuck you all, you know? Yeah. I mean, that, and no, it doesn't solve any problems, but you know what? It gets you over the hump, you know? It gets right. You on to the next thing, the next adventure, and the movie is so full of adventures, you know?
And also what's funny about that scene is that he just, if you don't know the song, he just gets up and starts yelling out the names of TV shows, yeah. You know?
The Jeffersons! Gilligan's Island!
You know, is that therapeutic? But
maybe. But we should all try it.
But you know, that's I don't want to spend too much time, but to me, I mean, that soundtrack, that's one of the best movie soundtracks of all time. I mean, just from the Iggy Pop Repo Man song, just all the way through, and just the Hombre Secreto. I mean, it's just
you know, I mean, and again, this gets all really, really personal in a sense, because my brother and I, my brother's about 3 years older than I am, and it was somewhere in that general late 80s time frame. We were doing some kind of cross country road trip. We lived in Iowa, and I had family in California. We were driving, you know, west, and we had the Repo Man soundtrack going on while we're driving down the road, and there was just something magical going on there. I mean, you know, who needs drugs? Not that we didn't have them, but still, you didn't need them if you're on the road and you're blasting the Repo Man soundtrack. That's about all it takes. You know, the only flaw in the whole thing was that a bumblebee flew into the car and stung my brother while he was driving down the interstate. That's another story altogether.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, well, the life of Reef Man's always intense.
So, all right, well, now let's take this actually on a much, instead of, you know, just talking about the circle jerks, you know, let's talk about, to me, all right, there are a lot of things going on in this movie. But now, all right, now what do you think was in the trunk? Because there are a lot of theories, and I think they're actually, after watching some of the extras, I think there is a right answer, but I guess I want to get your take on it. What do you think was truly in the trunk of the car?
You know, I always came down on the I don't care what's in the trunk kind of side of things. I mean, really, I mean, that's a fine conversation to have, and but at the end of the day, it doesn't, the movie doesn't hinge on what's in the trunk.
Right.
I mean, it's a MacGuffin, you know, to use the film school word. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that sets the plot in motion. So it doesn't really, at the end of the day, doesn't matter what's in the trunk. Doesn't mean it's not a interesting thing to speculate on, but, right. I honestly, you know, I mean, I'm like, well, maybe it's aliens, maybe it's a bomb. But ultimately, you know, it's the same damn thing in the briefcase that John Travolta opened up in the kitchen in Pulp Fiction, as far as I'm concerned. Right. It's the thing that makes the movie go forward, you know?
Right. And actually, you know, Charlie and I talked about that when we were setting up this discussion about Repo Man, is that, you know, both of us had the same thought, you know, and probably anyone who's seen Repo Man has had that same thought when watching, the first time you watch Pulp Fiction, as soon as he opens up the glowing briefcase, you go, Repo Man.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I thought.
I was waiting for John Travolta to just go poof, you know, turn into a skeleton and be gone.
Right, with just his boots last night. Yeah. And actually, no, Vanamond on the Deadpan boards found out that that is a reference, and I don't, this is over my head, he said that's a reference to the movie Kiss Me Deadly.
Interesting.
Which I didn't know. I've never seen the movie.
We'll have to delve deep into that.
Right.
To me, the briefcase kind of really sums up why I love the movie, because if you look at it as a movie, it sort of sucks. I mean, there's no real, like, coherency to the plot.
Right.
There's no reason to really watch from one scene to the next. It spins a sort of a hypnosis of its own, and it almost like, I mean, not to get all pretentious, but almost like poetry, you know. It doesn't really matter literally what's going on. What matters is the feeling that the movie creates. And I mean, with all the characters and with each and every individual scene, and I mean, every line in this movie is quotable. I mean, every line could be a punchline somewhere in your life, you know. You know, right. You know, it's like, somebody pissed on the floor again. That could be a punchline at some point in your life, you know.
Get in the damn car, boy. Yeah, you're right. That's a really good point, right? There's so many, just about every line of dialogue can be quoted. And actually, the actor who's one of the Rodriguez brothers said that, you know, he's heard many times in his life because of that movie. He said, was it Hermanos Rodriguez, don't believe in drugs. Like he said, a lot of people will do that, and then right before they take a hit.
Of course, because that's also in the world of that movie. You know, it's all, you say one thing and you do the other, you know.
Right. Now, since you already used the word pretentious, we'll get a little pretentious. But now, of course, I think the main theme, there's a ton of themes to this movie. I think the main theme, the one that kind of interests me, is the very end, of course. We should have said Repo Man spoilers from the get-go.
Yeah, well, but you got to know that going into this, right?
But the very end, you know, and it's kind of agreed that the two of these guys in the car, Miller, who incidentally, I think Miller's my favorite character, is the most interesting. But the
Tracy Walter is a god, as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Yeah, Bob, gotta love him as Bob in Batman. Yeah.
Right.
And he was even in the Conan sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably one of the best things about the Conan sequel, in fact, you know. Yes, now the blonde chick is dead.
All right, that was a total detour. But yeah, Tracy Walter.
The Conanapalooza later on, but anyway.
That will come up, absolutely. But yeah, actually, I am a Tracy Walter. I appreciate Tracy Walter. He's got, you know, a very unique actor. And just, anyway, it's interesting that his character and Otto are the ones who ascend, basically. You know, they're the ones who transcend. And you almost wonder why. I mean, you know, he is of the Repo Man code because he quotes them. I mean, he doesn't drive.
No, because the more you drive, the less intelligent you are.
Right, which is the to me, I mean, you're right. You're right about all the lines being quotable, but that is absolutely my favorite line in the whole film.
Absolutely.
And that line's really important because the very next shot is Otto in the passenger seat.
Exactly, yeah.
While Bud's driving.
Right.
But yeah, I wonder why these are the two that get to transcend. I wonder why these are the two that get to go.
Well, okay, if we're in pretension mode, I'll take a stab.
Yeah,
It happens sometimes. People just explode. Hey, we know all about that here on the Deadpan, don't we? It happens sometimes. Just another of the comically brilliant throwaway lines in this. The policeman talking about what happened to the first one. More brilliantness as the parents gaze into the television set, not hardly even noticing him as he comes in, and he goes to the kitchen, pulls a can of food out of the refrigerator. Yes, it's labeled food. And his mom says, "Put it on a plate, son. You'll enjoy it more." And his reply, "Oh, I couldn't enjoy it any better." Brilliantness. Food. I can't enjoy it any better.
All right, yes, this episode is dedicated to Repo Man, but it wouldn't be Deadpan without covering three greasy spoon comments. And every week we replace the word comments with something more fun. And this week, I guess we'll replace the word comments with Shih Tzus. So this week, those who have posted Shih Tzus, we'll read five Shih Tzus off of the comments board. All right, the first one from Mr. Ditto Swoon says, "The giggles have returned."
What's he talking about?
I don't know what he's talking about.
He's clearly making that up.
Next, the Energizer Bunny says, "I wonder if we have enough shovelable space to justify a snowblower to my husband."
Is that something sexual? What is she saying?
All right, you hear Leanne quietly in the background.
You're so cheating.
Shh.
You just cheated. I saw it.
The Smarty Hotties registered trademark says, "Vandermond again. Diner noises! !! Ooh, !! Jack made them all funky. I like the way you have been messing with the greasy cockles intros." Cockles for Deadpan 85. Bunny, ah yay. Vandermond, hospital food and arguments. Smarty Hotties, where are we, LOL? Smarty Hotties, jar of nipples. Sorry it was so long, Jack. Lost Ralph, tweet. Hi, Lost Ralph. Dr. Zoeberg. Here.
I'm not reading my own damn comment. That's gay.
The next comment from the person sitting right next to me.
Gay as in G-E-I-G-H.
Phoenix Leanne Loveth's Jack says, "Some of the pics from our day. Smiley face. http://www.flickr.com/photos/podcast_Leanne/ mountain climbing and art looking and Mexican food eating. Soon to be drinking and hot tubbing."
Which we never did.
Smiley face. Hi, smiley face.
Oh, you are so cheating. These are not random people. He is so going through these. But I like Jeremy's. That's funny.
Jeremy from Seattle says, "This is the fifth and final greasy Shih Tzu of the week." Jeremy from Seattle says, "Bow down to, in bold font, Biggie Fresh, bitches, !! That's the end of the greasy spoon Shih Tzus of the week.
What's bonus?
Oh, is there a bonus one? All right, there's a bonus one. But you have to read the bonus, motherfucker.
You'll probably find the longest one on there. Say your bonus thing.
Bonus thing.
Which one? Energizer Bunny?
Yes.
Says, "I think I'll go up to my husband when he comes home and say, 'Hi, Gorky.' That'll confuse him." Huh? I missed that. Don't do the damn clap. Stop.
That's the end.
Keep your hands off the co-host. Stop it. Stop touching my nipples. Nobody wants to hear that.
I think everybody wants to hear that. Mouse click. Giggles.
Hello. This is Amy Bowen, a.k.a. the Deadpan Ambassador. You're listening to the Repo Pan episode of Jack Mangan's Deadpan podcast. Deadpan is the melon farming way.
Just keep in mind. Yes, Deadpan. Pablo Picasso was never called an asshole. More Repo Man wisdom. The more you drive, the less intelligent you are. Oh, so true. Come on, Archie, let's go do those crimes. Yeah, let's go get sushi and not pay. Absurdism at its best.
They are the two innocents in this movie. They are the two that are sort of in some way innocent. Otto sort of is being pulled into this world of crime and drugs and da 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 da. But he's pure. He's already got a code of his own. I mean, it's not a code that any of us would necessarily, you know, say is what I want to do. But he's not really on a much of an arc other than to realize that there's more to the world than his little punk life. But he still sort of stays to this, hues to this course. Mm-hmm. And then Miller's already there. I mean, he's the guru on the mount, you know, dispensing all of the wisdom of the film, you know. and I think it's just Otto is like the perfect pupil for Miller's philosophy, and they sort of at the end, you know, they come together. Somehow it just always made sense to me that they were the two. That Miller was driving the car. Finally Miller's driving, you know, as it sails across the skies of Los Angeles, you know.
And I always thought, really, or what my take on that also is that these were the two, at that scene at least, who approached the car without any selfish motive. The scientists were there to, you know, the government was there to right. do this, and the repo men were there for the $20,000. But Miller just walked up to it, just pure, you know, in a pure kind of state. And then when he invited Otto, Otto just got in. Otto wasn't thinking, oh, I can get reward. He just was like, you know, cool.
And that's that innocence and pureness. Yeah.
Right.
You know, they're the ones that don't care about the money, don't care about the whatever the conspiracies and all of that kind of crap that's floating around in the movie. You know, they're just like, this is intense, you know, let's just do it because right. it's intense, you know? Yeah, no, absolutely. Brilliant piece of filmmaking.
Yeah. You know, and just a lot of fun. And as we said, you know, the dated thing is very true, but it's a lot of fun and you're right. And it's very punk rock. That's one thing. Really, when you try to think of punk rock films, there really aren't many. There's the original Suburbia, which isn't, sorry if you're a fan, I don't think it's a great movie.
No, well, it suffers from some budgetary problems right. and whatnot.
Right, and none of us would have ever even seen it if Flea wasn't in it.
Right,
and then,
right.
And then Sid and Nancy, of course, is a punk rock movie, and then Repo Man. And I'm sure I'm forgetting one. I'm sure someone can enlighten me, but that's about...
Downfall of Western Civilization.
But I mean, that's even a documentary.
Yeah, but that's right? a documentary. It's not, yeah. No, I think, you know, it captured it. I mean, I think it's okay that it's one of the few, because I think this one captured all the issues, the punk mm-hmm. thing. I mean, we haven't even talked about the whole generic food, you know, right. thing, right. which at the time when I watched it was literally happening. I worked at a grocery store. I was, you know, I didn't like sing the 7-Up theme song as I was pricing things, but I was, you know, that Kevin, you know,
right.
not, I wasn't Kevin literally, but I was doing his job and Otto's at the beginning of the movie. Right. And we had, you know, generic beer. I mean, generic beer. It's a white can with a black label that said beer on it. And it was literally there. We sold it. We, you know, people drank it. And so that sort of taken to task that consumerism and commercialism and all of that. And it's like, put it on a plate, son. It'll taste better.
Right.
As he's eating the meat out of the food can, you know.
Right.
I mean, all of that stuff was punk. That was all punk, and the music was punk, and punks had a reputation of being kind of brutes, and I never felt that way when I was into that. I always thought that the punks were pretty smart because they were noticing things and calling things out and calling them out in just this loud, raucous, fun kind of way that other people weren't really necessarily wanting to be talked about. And I think the movie does all that really well.
But then the movie actually, you know, for 1984, I guess is a bold step, you know, that it kind of points out even the hypocrisy of the punk movement in his friend's death.
Yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
He says, I blame society. He says, and Otto just can't, even on his friend as he's dying, he can't stand the bullshit of it. He
yeah,
has
like,
to correct him.
You're just a white suburban punk, just like all of us. And
right.
of course, it still hurts, yeah. No, I mean, and I think that was one of the things about punk was that they rejected every, I mean, it was like nihilism all the way down. They rejected everything, including themselves, you know?
Right.
I mean, we're just a bunch of bullshit, too. It's all a bunch of bullshit, you know?
Right, and Johnny Rotten is, John Lydon, Johnny Rotten is famous for, you know, yelling at his audience, like, you all look the same. You're all wearing uniforms with your mohawks. You all look exactly the same, you know? So, right, it's very punk, and that, you know, that's why that scene is so punk, where he says, you know,
absolutely,
he says, you're a white suburban punk just like me.
Yeah, they set it up a little bit with prior to that with the you know, let's do some crimes, yeah, let's go order sushi, not pay. It's like, yeah, that's real hardcore right there.
This is my parting thought on this is the recent viewing of the movie. The scene that struck me that had never struck me on any viewing before was when they're driving down through the ghetto. And Bud is just disgusted and says, look at all these poor people. I just want to find out how much they owe and make them pay.
Right.
That had never struck me before. And then I watched a little bit of the director's commentary and everything, and it's a good point. You know, their take on it was they're saying, well, the repo man is sort of the linchpin of the capitalist society.
That's
because
true.
You know, you get all this stuff, and that's great. Everything's great. But if you fuck up the system, you know, if you go against the system, that's where the repo man
comes. We come back in and we take what you've taken and bring it back to the man. Yeah.
Right. And they all have their code, and you know, but that's what Otto never really embraced that, you know?
No. He was in it for the fact that it was sort of more thrilling, I think, than the life he had led before.
Right.
And, you know, he realized that even though he was part of the system, it was like living a movie of some sort, you know. I mean, you had people chasing after you, shooting after you, all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the end of it all, you know, he kind of got rewarded, I guess, in a sense.
And if you remember that scene, that's when he gets disgusted with Bud, because Bud kind of starts yelling at him and says, what are you, do you want to in or out? And he finally gets out. That's where Otto gets out of the car.
Right.
So that scene really, that's, for me, you know, as a repeat viewing, that's another thing about this movie. You can watch it again and again, and, you know, every time you do, you'll see something new and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need to watch it multiple times. I mean, if for nothing else, for the, you know, have the whole plate of shrimp conversation, and then later on in the movie, you see the sign in the window at the convenience store saying, plate of shrimp, $1.99. I mean, just that level of looking for detail in the film, it rewards repeat viewing, but, absolutely, it stands up. It stands up right now, and stands up. I could probably watch it every week for the next 10 years and get something out of it. You know,
right. And by the way, we have an air freshener tree hanging from the microphone.
That's right. You find one in every car, or motorcycle, as the case may be.
So
excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Charlie. I think we did some good Repo Man riffing, and I don't know how long we went, but thanks for coming on, and thanks for dispensing your wisdom. And everyone should listen to your podcast. Got to give that a plug.
Yeah, well, I didn't get a chance to talk about beer in Repo Man, because it is actually a through and ongoing theme, other than the generic beer thing, but the fact that many main characters are named after beers, Bud, Ole, Light, and the fact that, you know, beer seems to be a currency among the repo men. You know, maybe I'll have some thoughts on that on my own podcast. But thanks very much, Jack, for having me on.
Hello, Jack. This is Tricker Overdrive with some more thoughts on Repo Deadpan. One of the scenes I particularly enjoyed was this book will help your life, Diuretics. And then they just threw the Dianetics/Diuretics book right into the trash bin and burned it. It's 1984, and Dianetics was in its heyday almost, long before Tom Cruise and the Scientology push. You know, the L. Ron Hubbard, I believe at that point, was still around, and the organization was really freaking powerful at the time. So to actually kind of take a stab back at them and being in Hollywood really did show a bit of an independent streak. And yeah, as we all know, South Park, you can't even take on Scientology now, even though everyone knows that it's a crock of Xenu bullshit. Anyway, if you don't believe me, just see the South Park episode, and then, you know, heck, check out Calls for Cthulhu, because they really lampoon them there, too. Just some more thoughts on Repo Pan. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hello, Sir Vanaman, with some thoughts on Meatball Man. I never saw the movie when it was originally released, and I suspect I would have enjoyed it more in the 80s as a teenager than I did now. But last Saturday night, I watched the movie all the way through, and it was okay, enjoyable enough. I liked some of the acting, especially by Howard Dean Stanton, and the plot was really weird in a good way. I liked the reference to the old film Kiss Me Deadly at the beginning of the movie with the highway patrol man, and the way the director Alex Cox copies Hitchcock and puts himself in the shot in the car wash scene. Some things I didn't like about the film was that I found the Emilio Estevez character of Otto annoying for most of the picture. The punk music used as a soundtrack for the movie left me cold, and some of the acting for the small parts was atrocious, not even a so bad it's good sort of way. So I would put Repo Man in the category of once is enough. Enjoyable enough, but not a movie that I would want to rewatch anytime soon.
Oh. Yeah, I'm here, man. The lights are growing dim. I know a life of crime led me to this sorry fate. And yet, I blame society. Society made me what I am.
That's bullshit. You're a white suburban punk, just like me.
But it still hurts.
You're gonna be all right, man.
Smuggling, a short story by Amy Bowen. The winter coats made good camouflage, but they were getting to be uncomfortably hot. Frank had slipped in to hide among the coats, which were hanging on hooks in the back corner of a small storeroom, over half an hour ago. All that time he had been listening intently for the end-of-the-day sounds that would indicate that the coast was clear. Frank worked here, and yet here he was, hiding out like some punk, planning to rob the place. Why had he ever gotten involved with the United Fruitcake Outlet? It was an organization just as secret as the research he was doing, a group of civilians who believed in and planned to prove the existence of flying saucers and aliens. They shared his passion, and it was great to be their inside man. However, what he was about to do for them just might cost him his job. "It doesn't matter," he told himself. "When this stuff gets into the media, we won't have to do anything to earn a living except keep feeding the public more information. They'll go nuts for this stuff." Frank was currently on a mission that had been organized during a recent planning session with the United Fruitcake Outlet. He was hiding in a storeroom in a warehouse at the Air Force Base near Roswell, New Mexico. There was physical proof of alien life here, and he knew exactly where to find it. The air in the storeroom was dusty and chemical-tinged, and there was an empty blue-and-white can of drink on the floor. Frank could hear someone walking through the warehouse now. The footsteps passed by the door to the storeroom, then faded away. After a moment, he heard the resounding boom of a very large door closing. The last of his co-workers had gone home for the evening. Frank reached for his flashlight, turned it on, and exited the storeroom, closing the door behind him very quietly. He ran the beam of the flashlight up and down one of the warehouse's neat stacks of wooden crates, rising high on metal shelves. He set off down the aisle, quickly skimming the labels on the crates. There it was. On the floor, among the wooden crates, there was a small metal refrigerator that opened from the top, like an ice chest. It was on wheels and was plugged into an electrical socket on the floor. "Top secret," screamed the word stenciled on the lid in bright red paint. "Authorized personnel only." Frank smiled, unplugged the unit, and wheeled it down the aisle and out through the back door of the warehouse. His beloved 64 Chevy Malibu was waiting there for him, the trunk already open. After putting on elbow-length rubber gloves and thick, very darkly tinted safety goggles drawn from the pockets of his lab coat, Frank flung open the lid of the refrigerator. A bright, acid green glow came from inside it. Doing his best to look away as much as possible, Frank transferred the four alien bodies into the trunk of the car, lifting them with two short metal spades, which he had left lying on the ground next to his car just for this purpose. As soon as the last body was in the trunk, he slammed it shut and slumped against the car, relieved. He had done it. When Frank had finished putting the gloves, goggles, and spades in the front passenger seat and the refrigerator back where it had been, he took a look around the semi-darkened warehouse. This was where he had spent 16 years of his career. This was where the secret dreams of scientists as crazy as he was, dreams like the experimental bodysuits known as vaporware, were made into reality every day. This was the current storage facility for the neutron bomb, the invention whose horrific effects Frank had taken such drastic steps to forget. He closed and locked the warehouse and drove out of the complex, thinking about the next steps of his mission. He would return to Los Alamos, where the alien bodies would be the center of attention in the United Fruitcake Outlet's press conference and their ticket to fame. That was when Frank realized that fame was the last thing he wanted. The second he appeared on TV, everyone would say, "Hey, isn't that the guy who invented the neutron bomb?" He didn't want to be reminded of that constantly, remembered for that. He just wanted to drive forever, leave all the secrets and the weapons research behind. Then he remembered that what he was smuggling in his trunk was a weapon, a very powerful one. Screw it, he decided. He was out of here. He would drive to California and be just another face in the crowd. There was a lot more population to lose yourself in there than there was in New Mexico. He could drive all over the state if he wanted to, and never have to open the trunk again. Reaching the nearest major highway, he took it westward. Once he was on his way, he threw the spades out the window and into the barren desert landscape. He didn't need the inside of his car to start glowing, too.
Jack, a request. From now on, it's not outro babble or intro babble. It's pernicious nonsense. Wait a minute. Let me check that.
Pernicious nonsense.
Yes, pernicious nonsense. Fabulous.
Hey, Jack. This is my really great review of Repo Man. There is a movie called Repo Man that we once watched for an episode of Deadpan. I was kind of confused and slightly amused and standing. I mean, what the fuck? That's it.
Trigger Overdrive with the last thought on Repo Pan. The one scene that's always changed in my mind over the years as I've seen it was the scene with the scientist lady with the metal hand in the bar, and then the punk people walk over and they're like, "Ooh, she's got a metal hand." And then she kind of like starts tonguing it or whatever. Well, I was like a little kid, like before the age of puberty. That scene like made me almost sick to my stomach, almost want to vomit. Later, when I saw it, when I was like in my teenage years, it was like this kind of like a string of something like semen or saliva or whatever coming off her hand after she like for some reason starts tonguing the chick's metal hand. You know, I'm like 14 or whatever, and found it kind of strangely erotic. You know, I don't know what the heck that's about. But then when I'm like later in my 20s and I'm watching that scene again, it's like, why the hell did they put that in there? Anyway, it's just thoughts on Repo Pan. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Oh, I'd forgot what a brilliant film that is. Not brilliant like Serenity. Not brilliant like not brilliant effects. Not brilliant like Serenity, or not brilliant like some classic Hitchcock film, but brilliant in its capture of a mood and of a place and a time. Just the whole ridiculous surrealism, the whole mindless, just interconnected series of nothing. I don't know what to say. That's just brilliant. For those of you who didn't see it when it first came out, weren't into the punk scene at the time, or music scene even, you may be scratching your heads at this one. Just wonderful and surreal. I mean, it's not just a punk opus. It's also surreal comedy. The whole reoccurring themes with the scented pines and the diuretics novel and the generic food business just thrown in there for the oddball offbeat humor. But anyway, brilliant film. Nice. Nicely done. Don't know what else to say about this film. Other than how swell it is. Chaos. Grittiness. Meaningless rambling from one thing to the next. Vaguely tied together by a surreal idea. I know some will call it silly. Do you know what? Some of the best things in life are silly. And thus, the deadpan.
All right, and thank you for sticking it out with us for 46-plus minutes of the Repo Pan Palooza. What really is amazing about this is just how much this group of people pulled together and everyone watched this movie and everyone contributed their thoughts, positive or negative, and even, holy crap, we got fan fiction. That's got to be the first time, the first Repo Man fan fiction ever created. So let's do some greasy jelly beans, and then we'll end this pernicious nonsense and call it a show. At 11:46, which is close enough to midnight, we've got 580 comments. Mouse click, mouse click, mouse click. The predictions were 598, 551, and 589. So 589 was the closest, and that went to Amy Bowen, the Deadpan Ambassador. All right, thank you everyone for your contributions and for watching the film and for playing along. And I hope, even if you didn't like the movie, I hope this was a fun little experiment and game for you. And we will have to do this again sometime. So that's it. The life of a deadpan is always intense. Not coming back after the music or doing that stupid, no, that's not it game this time. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week for the Unshow. Mouse click. We'll be right back.
He was hiding in a storeroom in a warehouse at the Air Force Base. He was... Sorry. He was hiding in a storeroom in a warehouse at the Air Force... Oh, I'm gonna run out of memory before I finish this, aren't I? No, apparently not.